From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. The new UN sanctions on North Korea have won rare praise for the Trump administration from a leading Democrat not known for his kind words for the president. Maryland Senator Ben Cardin, the top Democrat on the Foreign Relations Committee, called the U.S.-sponsored resolution toughening sanctions a good move.
I give our team a lot of credit for getting that done. There are pretty strong additional sanctions to be imposed against North Korea because of their continued testing of ballistic missiles.
Sanctions resolution that the Security Council passed unanimously on Friday puts more limits on imports that support the missile and the programs for nuclear development. Nikki Haley is the U.S. ambassador to the U.N.
On November 29th, Pyongyang launched an intercontinental ballistic missile. This was another attempt by the Kim regime to masquerade as a great power while their people starve and their soldiers defect.
North Korea is calling on the latest sanctions an act of war. Suicide bomber on foot blew himself up close to a compound of Afghanistan's National Intelligence Agency in the capital Kabul today, killing at least three, wounding one other. There was no immediate claim of responsibility. Blast comes a week after the Islamic State claimed an attack on a training facility of that same agency in Kabul that ended when the attackers were killed before causing significant casualties. Peru's president has granted a medical pardon to jailed former leader Alberto Fujimori, who was serving a 25-year sentence for human rights abuses and corruption. Fujimori served as president of Peru from 1990 until 2000. This is VOA News. U.S.-based research company ResearchNow SSI, hit by a fire in the Philippines, is now confirming that 37 of its employees died in the blaze. The fire erupted Saturday, and by Sunday it was brought under control, but smoke continued to billow from the building. Local fire marshal says the blaze might have started in a furniture store on the third floor of the building. White Zimbabwean farmer Rob Smart and his two sons have returned to their farm 6 months after they were forced out by police during ex-President Robert Mugabe's reign. Reuters' Matthew LaRotonda reports.
Their return marks the first sign that new President Emmerson Mnangagwa is keeping his vow to stop illegal land seizures and restore property rights. He'd heard of Smart's plight while still vice president and took up the case. Mnangagwa became president last month after a de facto coup ended 93-year-old Robert Mugabe's rule. Zimbabwe's economy had collapsed in the latter half of Mugabe's 37 years in power, particularly after the seizure of thousands of white-owned commercial farms. Land ownership is one of Zimbabwe's most sensitive political topics. The new government's now ordered illegal occupiers to vacate lands immediately, which could be a ray of hope for some white farmers hoping to return to their land.
That is Reuters' Matthew LaRotonda reporting. Spain's King Felipe directed his Christmas message to the separatist-minded region of Catalonia, and what he says is the need to avoid confrontation. In an October speech, the king condemned what he called the unacceptable disloyalty of the Catalan separatists. Pro-independence lawmakers dominate the Catalan parliament after Thursday's election. Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy disbanded the previous parliament after Catalonia legally held an independence referendum, leading to violence and nationwide chaos. Palestinian Boy and Girl Scouts kicked off Christmas celebrations in Bethlehem, the traditional birthplace of Jesus, with a colorful march through Manger Square. But religion mixed heavily with politics in Bethlehem, which is ruled by the internationally backed Palestinian Authority. Two big signs in Manger Square declared that Jerusalem will always be the eternal capital of Palestine. That was a play on words regarding Israel's claim, backed in a declaration by President Trump 3 weeks ago, that Jerusalem is the eternal capital of Israel. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com. And we're always available on the VOA mobile app.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and a Merry Christmas to all our listeners on the continent and around the world. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today's Monday, December 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you. Mali's former president Amadou Toumani Touré returned to the country Sunday for the first time since his government was overthrown in 2012. The former president has been residing in neighboring Senegal following his overthrow.
The place he has to stay is not in Senegal. He has to stay in Mali. We have many other former heads of state who are staying in Mali. So a former head of state's place is his country.
Amadou Thiam is the leader of the Malian Opposition Democratic Alliance for Peace. And as the festive season enters high gear across the African continent, towns and cities are buzzing with economic activity. A street vendor in Uganda's capital, Kampala, uses a megaphone to advertise his goods to potential buyers. And the international human rights organization Amnesty International says thousands of Somali refugees who were pressured into leaving Kenya's Dadaab camp are now facing drought, starvation, and renewed displacement in Somalia. Those stories plus sports are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Mali's ousted former president Amadou Toumani Touré returned to the country Sunday for the first time since his government was overthrown in 2012. The former president has been residing in neighboring Senegal following his overthrow. Mr. Toumani Touré, who was accompanied by his family, arrived in the Malian capital, Bamako. He was warmly welcomed by Prime Minister Modibo Keita, Security Minister Salif Traoré, and supporters. His return to Mali came after local media quoted President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita urging the former president to return home after 5 years in exile following his ouster. The government in Bamako previously accused him of treason for his failure to tackle a rebellion led by a Tuareg armed group that eventually led to Islamic extremists allied to Al-Qaeda trying to take over the country. The charges were dropped last year after Parliament rejected the accusations as without merit. For reaction about the former president's return home, VOA's Peter Cloti reached parliamentarian Ahmadou Thiam, the leader of the Malian Opposition Democratic Alliance for Peace.
My political party is very delighted and very happy to see a former head of state coming back home, because after all, he's a Malian and he was president of Mali for almost 10 years. So we think the place he has to stay is not in Senegal. He has to stay in Mali. We have many other former heads of state who are staying in Mali. So a former head of state's place is his country, okay? And secondly, we think that if this can allow for Mali to make a way towards national reconciliation and towards peace, we think it's a good thing. So we ask the authorities today to take this into account, take very serious steps in involving all former heads of state, in involving all parts of the population to make sure that this opportunity brings in national reconciliation and peace in the country.
The government previously accused Toumani Touré of treason because he allowed militia groups allied to Al-Qaeda to destabilize the country. Do you subscribe to that view?
I was in parliament when this accusation was brought in front of parliament. And then it took parliament almost 1.5 years to analyze the document. And then the parliament finally came out with a report saying that there is no tangible proof to what had been sent by the government, saying that former head of state ATT allowed certain terrorist groups in Mali intentionally. So there was no tangible proof to that. So Parliament finally rejected the call that he's accused for treason. So we think the government, when they sent this issue. It was more for a political reason, because ATT, when he left, he didn't have any good reputation. So I think the government then wanted to make out of that political, I would say, a media political action. So, and they realized afterwards that it wasn't what they said.
His removal by Ahmadu Sanogo, you know, in 2012, some say was illegal and unconstitutional. Some are saying now is not the time to revisit that. But how are Malians reacting to his return on Sunday?
I would say there is people are quite divided on the appreciation to his return to Mali, because some people think that the current head of state, he became president because the military who overthrew ATT, the former president at the time, they favored the coming of the current head of state, who today is welcoming him very warmly. So some people think that the current head of state benefited from the coup d'etat that overthrew ATT, the former head of state. Now that we have those authors, those who undertook the coup d'etat, they are currently in jail, while the overthrown president is now being received by the same Ibeka in a very, very spectacular, in a very, very warm manner. So there is a sense of treason in the minds of some people in Mali.
The former president said he is not in Mali to participate in any politics. However, there are suggestions that he should be involved in crafting a policy or an action that will confront Islamic militant groups in part of Mali's north. How do you reconcile these two, since your party also welcomes him warmly?
No, we think ATT, the former head of state, has got lots of experience. He is also original from the center of Mali, where today we have all these militias, all this Islamic militancy. So we think, as an individual, as a former head of state, given the fact that he's still a respected person, he can, as a citizen, as a former head of state, have an influence in resolving some of the conflicts in central Mali. He's going to do it as a good citizen, but not as a politician. So that's how we understand it.
Ahmadou Thiam is the leader of the Malian Opposition Democratic Alliance for Peace. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Cloti from Mali's capital, Bamako. And today is Christmas Day, and like in many parts of the world, Christmas season in many African countries means lots of shopping in preparation for celebrations. At this time, many cities like Kampala's capital, Uganda, are buzzing with economic activities of buyers and sellers. Reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji hit the streets of Kampala and files this report.
Uganda's music legend Philbrother Song About Christmas plays in Nakibo Market at Jovia Mirembe's electric shop. She says she's making more profit during this festive season.
They come and buy on Christmas days, but other days they say that money is not there and they say they will buy during Christmas seasons. Yeah, it has improved in this season. We are selling more.
Merembe sells electricals like TV sets, fridges, ovens and mobile phones. She also sells music CDs. The street here is a beehive of activities, with people buying new things for their families. True businessman Moses Wadawa and his friend Salim Kigozi call buyers using a megaphone on Amirembe Road. Wadawa says most buyers want to end the year and start a new one with new items.
Due to the season, we also increased the price. Some were selling it at 10,000, but now due to the season, we have increased it a little bit. It is now at 20,000. And which was at 20,000, it is now like at 25, something like that.
Most of consumer prices increase during the Christmas season, and so is the price of transport. Kigozi, also a student at Kampala International University, says this season hasn't been the best, but he says nonetheless he'll be able to earn enough money to pay for his school fees.
At least you can sell like 5 to 6 pairs a day. And on normal days, we sell 2 to 3. But during the past Christmases, we used to sell like 20 pairs to 50.
Isaac Okau is one of the clients that have visited this shop. The father of three says he spends months working in the capital Kampala and travels back to his home district of Lila during the Christmas or when there is a big function. He says he's well prepared for this Christmas festival.
I bought turkey as a food, plus Irish, like one person, one sack of rice, which is 5 kg. Then I bought clothing for myself and for my children. All are up. And my mom, they are also okay.
Okau, a banker here in Kampala, says he misses the traditional drink called Ajono, also known as Marwa. VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And from Uganda, we go to Burundi in the capital, Bujumbura. Burundians say that this time around, Christmas is much more different compared to the last 2 years. Moses Havyarimana has this story.
This is one of the prominent churches in Bujumbura, Saint-Michel, where most of the Burundi Christian community conduct overnight prayers to repent and thank God in preparation for the new year. For the last 2 years, due to the political crisis, such prayers were not conducted. Wilinda Isenga is one of the citizens in Bujumbura.
We are ready for the Christmas as we remember when our Savior was born. I am so delighted in my heart that I'm going to celebrate this Christmas with my heart, which is open. When we have our heart open, reminding ourselves that the Lord has come on earth so that we may get life, we may rejoice for that.
More than 70% of Burundians are Christians, and Christmas is a special day for this community. Chandel is one of the Burundians who returned back from Uganda after the political crisis that erupted in 2015 forced her to leave the country.
Christmas is time to be with my family, my friends, to see people I've spent time without seeing, like being with my friends and also enjoying the birth of the baby Jesus.
Ejiron Rutashire is a bishop in one of the churches in Burundi.
So Burundian, to celebrate this great day in remembering that God has come. He is no longer Emmanuel only to be among people, but he is within us through the Holy Spirit.
In Burundi, Christmas season in the past years is known to be a good season for traders and businesses in the country. But this year wasn't business as usual. I met one of the businessmen in Bujumbura who preferred not to reveal his name.
This period is very difficult for population because they have not money, and we have big difficulty to sell because people doesn't have money. People have that become very poor. Last year it was more better.
Burundi was hit by a political crisis in 2015 that forced more than 400,000 people to flee the country. The country is now gaining relative stability as this Christmas season will mainly be for family reunions. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
As we approach the end of 2017, many development experts say that they are encouraged by efforts in many African countries that promote development-oriented policies and support infrastructure investment on the continent. The current lack of infrastructure means that doing business on the continent requires companies to perform tasks such as building service roads and installing power capacity for potential investors. The struggle, though, remains in understanding the importance of localized data in planning long-term infrastructure projects like malls, roads, etc. Ben Liu is the CEO of Frame, a geospatial data company that provides data on cities and subnational areas across the African continent. He says that he's encouraged by some of the progress in important areas like logistics, especially investment in the aviation sector.
The positive answer, the positive story is it's already changing, where you're seeing more and more African cities having direct connections. If you think about Ethiopian Airlines and the number of cities that they have a direct connection with, it's mind-blowing compared to where it was 5 or 10 years ago. It feels like Ethiopian Airlines is everywhere. And they're also now moving more into not just having to go through Addis every single time, but also having more regional connections as well. So I think on the air travel side, it's trending in the right way. I just hope it continues to progress in that way, and that there isn't an overexpansion like we were talking about with Kenyan real estate, where there's unviable routes and then there's a retrenchment and things start to go the opposite way. But there's progress afoot.
Speaking of progress, do you see, is there a case to be made for people who, again, invest a lot of money in, you know, big projects, massive projects, with the hope that consumers will come?
Well, so, yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. If we think about the opportunity for infrastructure-based investing, it is fundamentally going to be driven by the rise of the consuming class in Africa. Yes, there's a commodity story. There's always been a commodity story that would drive a lot of the need for infrastructure. But there are tens of millions of people who have entered the consuming class over the last decade. These are the people that are going to demand products and services, or reliable broadband, affordable broadband. And they are the ones that are going to drive the opportunities for these investments. Now, if you think about a place like Abidjan, over the last decade, over 1 million people have joined the consuming class in Abidjan alone. In Kinshasa, 4 million people have joined the consuming class in Kinshasa. Wow. Many people don't think about Kinshasa as a real destination of investment opportunity. There's a lot of challenges in the DRC, no question. But there is a tremendous concentration of consuming power in the capital city. And these millions of people are going to demand world-class airports that have convenient connections to reach other parts of the region as well as further afield. They're going to want intermodal transport, ports, roads, rail, that deliver those products and services at the prices they want, at the time they want, as well as the other things that we were talking about, internet, broadband, other forms of infrastructure. I'm very bullish in this context because we have seen such a rise. And yes, there may have been a little bit of an overstatement on Africa rising. It was maybe too simplistic in the narrative of painting the continent with one brush and one color, instead of thinking about where there are concentrations, where there are pockets of these consumers, and understanding those dynamics and making decisions accordingly. But there's no question, there's absolutely no question that there has been a significant increase in the number of consumers, and so that's going to create opportunities.
I guess the mistake that many make, or investors or everybody else, is to paint the continent as if it's one big country. And you're saying that you need to look at the different communities, different societies, different countries, and they all have their own data sets that speak to their experiences.
Exactly. And not just the peril with painting the entire continent as one country, but painting one country as uniform in nature. Let's take East Africa as an example. So if we think about the major urban areas, the major cities in East Africa, Nairobi, Kampala, Mombasa, Dar, and a number of the other cities, and then we think about the road corridors that link them together. Let's think about that as a country, for example. So these are the East African Community countries and the Eastern Congo. It accounts for 10% of the land mass of this region, these cities and the road corridors. But at the same time, it accounts for roughly 50% of GDP and about 60% of the consuming class in this region. So if you're thinking about opportunities in East Africa, you got to think about the major cities and the road and the towns and communities along those roads that connect those cities. That's the lens.
Thank you, Ben. That was Ben Leo, the CEO of Frame, a geospatial data company that provides data on cities and subnational areas across the African continent. And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omali in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Merry Christmas to you, Jackson, and a good Monday morning to you. We begin in Ghana, where Accra Hearts of Oak were crowned champions of the Ghana at 60 Cup March after playing out a pulsating 0-0 draw with Kumasi Asante Kotoko at the Baba Yara Stadium on Sunday. The Rainbow Club beat Kotoko to the trophy after winning the two-legged contest 3-1 on aggregate. Hearts of Oak won the first leg in Accra 3-1 and made work easier in Kumasi by defending the two-goal advantage in Kumasi. From one Champions Cup to another, and for the third time running, Abu Dhabi will play host to the Egyptian Super Cup on January the 12th, this time between domestic double champions Al Ahly SC and cup runners-up Al Masry at the Hassa bin Zayed Stadium. The 2015 Super Cup was hosted at the same stadium when Al Ahly beat rivals Zamalek 3-2. Morocco's eligible and Spanish-born Brahim Diaz has rejected an offer to join the Atlas Lions of Morocco ahead of the 2018 World Cup. The Malaga-born young star is hoping to play for La Roja despite several assurances from Javier Renard, the Moroccan coach, to include him in the Morocco's World Cup squad that is set to face Spain, Portugal and Iran. Sources claim that Morocco is set to accept Diaz's allegiance in case he fails to progress with Spain, even though he remains confident to achieve his ambitions. The 18-year-old has made his senior debut with Manchester City last Tuesday against Leicester City in the EFL Cup and previously featured for the Blues in the Champions League clash against Shakhtar Donetsk. And now to all those sports. Kenya will be represented by 132 athletes and 57 officials at the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games planned for April the 4th to the 15th in Australia. Chief de Mission Barnaba Kokri disclosed that from his recent series of meetings with the club games organizers, Kenya only benefited with 4 additional slots that will now be shared by boxing, swimming, shooting and Paralympics equally. And in cricket news, South Africa is set for a one-day night test cricket series against Zimbabwe starting on Tuesday. Selection is likely to be South Africa's biggest challenge ahead of their one-day night test, as Zimbabwe are unlikely to stretch the home side, but South Africa, ranked second in test cricket, will want to establish their best 11 in this four-day test ahead of a three-match series against India starting in Cape Town on January the 5th. And that's Daybreak Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Samson, and have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, December 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Wishing you a Merry Christmas, Africa.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.